Okay. All right. We're moving into the comment section for the RAC. I alluded to a position from the BLM. We do have a letter. Our BLM representative, we'll ask him to read that, and then we'll follow up with comments from the rest of the RAC.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a letter that is addressed to Kevin Bunnell, the regional supervisor for DWR. Speak into this a little closer then. And it from Paul Briggs, who's the Cedar City field office manager. So I'll try to do my best at reading this. Dear Mr. Bunnell, the Bureau of Land Management Cedar City Field Office appreciates the opportunity to comment on the Bighorn Sheep Management Plan for the Mineral Mountains and address the Southern Regional Advisory Committee on May 8, 2018. The Mineral Mountains are mainly within the Cedar City Field Office, with the northern portion of the range within the Fillmore Field Office. The Cedar City Field Office has been actively involved in a working group process since July 2017 to develop the management plan and attended several meetings with UDWR, elected officials, grazing permittees, and sportsmen to discuss the issues. We support the approach of a diverse stakeholder working group process and the opportunity to continue to be an active member of this group to ensure BLM is aware of management actions regarding bighorn sheep. We also view this as one of the many opportunities to work with the state of Utah and other stakeholders in implementing the Department of the Interior Secretarial Orders 3347, Conservation Stewardship and Outdoor Recreation, Order 3356, Hunting, Fishing, Recreational Shooting, and Wildlife Conservation Opportunities, and Coordination with States, Tribes, and Territories, and Order 3362, Improving Habitat Quality in Western Big Game Winter Range and Migration Corridors. The above referenced secretarial orders all direct the Bureau to work with state wildlife agencies and other stakeholders to enhance recreation opportunities on public lands while continuing to uphold and fulfill our multiple-use mandate to the American public. Now, the letter goes on to list those secretarial orders and then concludes, the Cedar City Field Office is committed to continue involvement in the Mineral Mountains Bighorn Sheep Working Group. BLM's participation will help fulfill our obligations as part of these secretarial orders, as well as allow us to be responsive to other users of the public lands in keeping with BLM's multiple-use mission. We look forward to working with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources regarding bighorn sheep management within the Cedar City Field Office. Sincerely, Paul Briggs, Cedar City Field Office Manager.
Okay, thank you. If you wouldn't mind giving a copy of that letter down there for the minutes, that'd be great.
Paul did tell me that he would send a signed copy of that letter to Kevin.
Okay.
So, yeah. Oh, you do have it. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Let's open it up for comments from the RAC. You'd like to go first?
You can. Get out.
I can see from this letter that the BLM is obligated by the Department of Interior specifically to work with the DWR on pretty much everything, looks like, and that's good. One question, you know, we talked about the NEPA deal, and Mr. Bushman bring up that, you know, NEPA is federal. We talked about the RMPs for the counties and the state, and he told us they basically don't include the DWR pretty much. I mean, through the RAC and the Big Game Board. One question I've got for you, Mr. Bushman, and they talked about oversight. Does anyone have oversight over the DWR? That's a problem we've had time and time again. My allotment on the Henry Mountains, the base of Henry Mountains, the trachyte allotment, has bighorn sheep on it. Every now and then, those young bucks, they'll be miles away from the herds that are on the Little Rockies and up on the Henrys, looking for new territory or a new herd. They get whipped out, I assume. I have sheep AUMs there, and I've threatened to activate them. In fact, I pay activation fee on them, and I haven't got the nerve to put sheep down there, because I know what'll happen. They'll be shot. There'll be other repercussions that we've seen happen in Oregon, and with those herds when they tried to kill the sheep that were outside the boundaries. So I've also seen there's a herd of sheep in Cap Reef National Park. I'm not sure how big it is. I've very seldom seen them until this winter, when there's quite a drought situation, and those sheep moved right down on the Fremont River, and it was, you could see them every day as you drove through that park. My phone is clear full of pictures. They're pretty. They're neat to look at, and I can't even resist not taking a picture of them. But there's been a problem in the past with these sheep and the damage they've caused to the sheep industry in the United States, especially the Western United States. I've seen it time and time again. These guys talk about meeting with you guys, and it just seems like I'm back in 07 in the buffalo deal we went through. The buffalo only graze on a certain slope, and these sheep graze on a 70% slope. That's fine till they don't. We've got problems with those buffalo down there. They're damaging the range. There's a lot of room on the Henry Mountains, but the buffalo only occupy a certain part of it, and there's too many there. There's habitat resource damage, and it won't come back. You've got to listen to these producers. They're fighting for their lives. They don't have the big money and can't tell you how many dollars, but it's their dollars. Anything they put on this land, it's their dollars. It's not something that you got for selling a tag, or you got for auctioning off a rifle at a convention, or you got donated to you. This is their livelihood, and they're fighting for their lives. And when you hear these organizations, Farm Bureau, Wool Growers, Cattlemen's Association, there's no way they will let you convert cattle to sheep permits. I've talked to whether it's BLM or I mean, you should be able to by law, but it hasn't. I've never known anywhere that it's happened. And like the guy from the Wool Grower said, you know, it's a possibility that raising sheep can be more profitable and more something that people will want to do. There's a lot of problems with predators and a lot of other things that they have to deal with, and that's part of the livestock industry. And when you introduce, just because it's a 70% slope, and there's feed there, and it's habitat for something. That doesn't mean you have to put something on it. Save it for your deer or whatever you have. You don't have to put a bighorn sheep on there. There's too many political problems with the bighorn sheep, and yeah, you can get an astronomical price for a sheep permit, but it's an astronomical cost to these livestock producers. And I guess I'm done for now.
Thank you. Anybody else? Tammy?
Can I just wait for everybody else to get
one? Yeah, as a Forest Service representative, I really don't have a dog in this fight, and I kind of hesitate to say anything, but I listen to this and it's deja vu because we went through it several years ago when they're looking at, well, the division was looking at putting Bighorn on the Oak Creek. And a lot of our permittees had similar concerns, and they're valid concerns, you know, and they needed to be addressed. And eventually they got through it, and we're, you know, the sheep were released there, and we're about, four years in? And I got to admit, you know, those, a lot of those concerns have never really materialized yet. And we got a lot of time left, but so far, the competition with the cattle, and it's all cattle, not many sheep there, there hasn't been any competition with cattle, we can tell. Matter of fact, the hard thing about those bighorns is finding them. They're in places that I don't want to go, and no cow with the right any sense at all want to go either. And, it's looking kind of promising. They might actually be fairly compatible, compared to other big game animals with cattle grazing. But the other thing was that the accountability, I hear that coming up a lot, and that was also a concern. And this was a state action on the Oak Creek. It was not a federal action. We didn't change one thing. We didn't change a fence. We didn't change anything. It was all the risk was taken by the division. Those sheep come down with pneumonia and all die. You know, that's the breaks. We weren't gonna do anything to really change our grazing policy or anything like that to do with it. Didn't decrease it. We weren't gonna decrease AUMs. We weren't gonna do anything like that. And that's one of the things I keep hearing. Maybe the division might want to think about formalizing that a little bit in their plans so that's a little more clear. Because it was understood by me, but I don't know if it actually appeared in the Oak Creek plan. The other thing is, the money did increase. I got to admit that it's a little more likely we'll get funding if we have projects that are in areas where there's bighorn sheep. And in fact, it's kind of a conflict of interest for me representing the Forest Service. I kind of hope this fails in a way because I don't want to compete with another sheep unit just south of us where I got to split the money with them. And so I'm trying to figure out how to vote on this. But it's definitely it's a contentious issue. And I think when the Oak Creek went through, I think it was a little farther along in the process where we had a few more people on board and didn't have quite this resistance. But anyway, for what it's worth.
It's, as I sit up here and I listen to the concerns, and I understand that they're valid concerns. I understand that there are people who make a living on public land. But it's public land.
And private,
absolutely. And you can make a living on the private, and that's great. And God bless America for it. This is wonderful. But on that same basic principle of freedom, who's to say that your right to make, a rancher's right to make a dollar on public land is any better than a guide's right to make a dollar on public land? And I struggle with that just because this is America, and we all say, God bless it. And I look at that and think, this is public land, and this is multiple-use land. and we sit here and these are valid concerns that you're scared of it. But I don't think that they're things to. I mean, the sheep and cows don't graze together. And even if they did, we're talking about a 3% ratio. And so it just makes me wonder, is there any other animal out there? And just tell me if there is, that's more compatible with cattle. And that's my point, is there's no other animal that's more compatible with cattle. And cattlemen are still pissed. But we can put a big old smiley face on and say, let's work together. I don't know how much more you can work together than desert sheep and cows. They are the most incompatible animals when it comes to food out there. And so I'd like to see a better use of public land that benefits more people. And I think that there's a lot of potential here for people for more people to enjoy public land. One more thing. I'm really glad I'm not an elected official in Beaver County. I'm just going to say that right now, because that would be terrible. Sorry, Tammy. That's a tough spot you're in. Hunters, you got.
I'm going to put in my 2 cents here, and I'll probably put in two more in a minute. I was kind of hoping Tammy would go first, but she's dragging it out. Obviously, I think it's very obvious. I know where I'm going to vote on this. I represent the sportsman. I'm going to vote sheep, period. That's where my vote's going. And hopefully, maybe my comments, I guess I'm putting them out there to get them on public record. But I think a couple really good comments have already been said. I think the audience has some really good comments. And I also think that we understand the livestock producers' concerns. I guess I would echo what I said the last meeting, however. I am not aware of a situation or a time where a sportsman's group has gone and tried to remove AUMs. I'm aware of many, many times where sportsmen's groups have tried to help, have done projects and spent money trying to help. And yet we have an animal, like Brian said, that is as least competitive with cattle as there is an animal out there. And it's just up in arms. Don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. So I echo what I said last meeting. I have a hard time. The sportsmen aren't showing up and trying to get cattle off the mountains. That doesn't happen the other way. So we talk about working together, but it sure feels one-sided. Now let me change a little bit here. There will be money coming. You know, we're talking about, I want specific projects. I want to know exactly what's going to happen. That's just a delay tactic. That's just a way to get your way and try to shut it down. Let's be honest. We know sheep are on that mountain. We have proven track record that there's going to be money come. In addition to that, we had a presentation tonight that showed $168 million, am I right, have been spent in Utah on habitat improvement. $168 million. I think we have a track record. Let's get specific into Beaver County. We have a track record. Millions of dollars on the ground in Beaver County from sportsmen. Millions. Let's talk Mineral Mountains specifically. Years ago, and I'm not keyed in on the exact arrangement that was done out there, but years ago when they were bringing elk down into here, I think it was more contentious than this meeting. Long story short, elk showed up. Elk spread over to Minerals. That turned into a limited entry, and I don't know the details or timelines. Here about, I want to say about 5 years ago, it came up and said, there were never supposed to be elk on Mineral Mountains. We want to get rid of that unit, and we want to kill elk off of there. Guess what SFW stance was in sportsman stance? Do it. Kill them. We supported it. We voted in favor. There is a track record. And I get a little tired of feeling like we're saying, let's work together, but I don't feel that. I think sportsmen have shown that they're willing to work together.
Mike?
Yes, if I've sat here and listened to all the comments, I can. This is truly a contentious situation we've got here, and I think the parties are probably pretty close to coming to some type of arrangement. If they can get back together, there may be more of a character conflicts in that group, whatever you want to call it, and maybe fresh eyes need to be looked at. But what I heard, I think there can be some type of agreement reached to where it would be amicable to both parties or to everybody involved. I'm reluctant to vote for it until those things are hashed out and there is some type of path to go on, rather than vote for it and as a go ahead with the plan and have everybody pissed off. I would hope that DWR would include the Wool Growers Association. It appeared from one comment that they were purposefully left out. That's the biggest threat in my eyes today is the wool growers. And maybe the boundaries need to be looked at to make sure that you can exclude those areas where there possibly can be some sheep trail, or where they could impact the sheep trails, and be more tentative to those specific areas where there's domestic sheep. I was in Idaho when that Payette stuff broke out, and the losers were the sheep industry. They got kicked totally off that the Hell's Canyon side of that forest, and a lot of the up around Cascade and Payette. So it is a real threat. We may not look like it here. We can just draw a line and say we're going to go out and kill them, but if they cross that line. But reality, I think you need to carve out a little better unit to be involved in. Anyway, with that said, I would hope that the parties can get back together and work this out, because I think you're very close.
Tammy.
All right. It's always been my position that it was a possibility, but with very stringent conditions. And from the first time that we had the meeting, and I, like I said before, it was misrepresentation saying that the commissioners were supportive. I think it's something that we can work together. I think it's a possibility. Do I think that the Wildlife Board is going to do it with or without our blessing? I think it's a huge probability. But my ask would be that, and can I ask a question even though it's not question time? How many other racks have you already presented them to everybody else? Are we the last one?
This is the third. Yeah. Sorry, Jace Taylor, Division of Wildlife. So this is the third rack. We presented to the central region and to the northern region, and it passed at both of those.
Yeah, I understand that was passed unanimously, but I didn't know if there had been another one in between. So there's two more?
Two more after this.
Okay. So with that being said, from the commission side, personally, and you know, everybody can get their feelings hurt or whatever you want to say on this, and I've said it before, those of you who have something personal to lose, like your livelihood, the economy for your family, the economy for a rural community and a county, we do take it personally. And for those of you that cannot see that risk and cannot understand where we're coming from, you don't have a personal risk involved. And, you know, I try to live by one rule. I shouldn't say it's one rule. I have a rule. It's called the 5 R's. And every decision that you make, you try to be reasonable, rational, responsible, realistic, and respectful. And I have said from day one that as far as multiple use, I think we ought to all be on the same team. We ought to all be working together, that nobody should be negatively impacted. And I'm not just a damn politician just spouting politics. I know, I'm just saying that's me. That's my version. Oh. Never, I'm sure. But I'm not just spouting politics, is what I'm trying to say. I think that in the end, the enemy is the environmental impacts and the groups that are sue happy and you know, live off the EJA process, and those are the ones that are to blame for the loss of the permits, not only, you know, with the sheep in Idaho and now in the Uintas. They're doing the same thing with the cattle in California. And it does tie it back to the bighorn, and that was a huge in the draft. So, Dave, where did you go? No, I can't see. And there you are. In the last draft that Brian gave us, it said they were going to introduce, and then when it came out in the packet, it was reintroduced. So that's where the language changed just since the last draft. So, you know, I don't. Well, I won't be too smart alecky, but it does, the bighorn sheep, maybe, possibly, were here, you know, historically. It's like people still crying over slavery. Were we ever impacted by that? No. Do we know personally that the bighorn were here? No. But I think that there's room for both. I think that we need to hammer this out. I think there's a way for all of us to do this, so that nobody's negatively affected. I do think that what needs to happen is that the division needs to take a step forward, take full responsibility. One suggestion in our county meetings that this herd is basically a disposable herd, kind of like what you said about the Oak Creeks, that, you know, if they get sick, they die, whatever. You know, it's not a negative impact on anybody else. They have the nursery herds and other places that can continually feed this place in case something, you know, the pneumonia issue and that hits. And so, you know, nobody should be negatively impacted. I do think that the biggest concern is the wool growers and our sheep herds. Personally, I'm out of the sheep business. I've always had a couple hundred head of sheep, and they would have all been in the boundaries. So that's, you know, I can see that side of it too, and I think that's a huge deal. So in my mind, the only way that this thing goes forward is that there is, and this might be a brand new concept. I know that there's the Friends of the, what do you call it, Ponsagunt, and those different kinds of groups. This might be its own individual group, a multiple use county working group. Kelly Rollins actually talked about this a while back, bringing sportsmen and the ranchers and everybody involved together to, you know, do these projects and whatever. I think that's a possibility. I think that's really, honestly, the only way to go forward with this plan is if the division and the wildlife board are willing to put this together and make some hard decisions, you know, some definite decisions, like Mike said, definite boundaries, a little more teeth in it that's going to protect everybody. So with that, going to the Wildlife Board, I think they table it until, you know, this is initiated. I think it's a possibility to do that, but that would be my recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Any more comments down this way?
I knew I wasn't done. I gave my 2 cents a minute ago. Now I'm going to fight for it a little bit, because there's a couple things that I think we're missing here. There's windows of opportunities. We've got a window. We had a window last year. It was delayed. We've got another window now. And if you don't take advantage of windows, doors shut. I don't know when this door is going to shut, but it will shut. It'll move on, and there's times and opportunities to take advantage. We've been working on this for a year and a half. To say we're closer than we were a year and a half ago, I think, is naive. I don't think we're going to agree on this. I think that there's some concessions that could be made. I think there's things that are going to happen. Again, I repeat that I think experience tells us that things will be done. We have there's a lot of track record in the state of things happening and money being spent. One other comment I want to say. Again, I appreciate the livestock perspective. My wife comes from a farming ranching family. It's huge. Most of her uncles still are involved in it. It's family. I understand that. I understand the business. But somehow, we're getting the message across in here that people making their livelihood in the hunting industry don't matter, that only ranchers matter. I can count six people in this room that make their livings in the hunting industry. That's also a living. That's also a vested interest. And let's remember where these sheep are going to be is 94% public land.
Okay, Berlin.
I'm confused. This was presented that we might talk about it at another RAC earlier, but we have not discussed this. Who's we?
The initial, I don't know if you call them working groups, but initially there was hopes of getting it before the RACs last year, and that was delayed to try to work through it some more. It was hoped to get this in the RAC last year, and it was pushed back to try to work on this. So it's been being worked on for a year and a half. That's not accurate. It's been being worked on for 5 or 6 years, but it's been involved in groups of mixed users for a year and a half.
Okay, let's see if we can move towards a motion.
I'm going to make a motion that we support the division's recommendation as presented.
Do we have a second? Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have discussion? Okay, Gene?
I'm wondering about the timeline that is within this thing that says that they'll release as soon as fall of 18. I'd like to see this come together a little bit more before a release is done. I'd like to see. It sounds to me like there's a lot of loose ends, a lot of people that still aren't on board that are supposed to be stakeholders in this. So maybe that timeline needs to be evaluated at least. Maybe kicked back a year, but at least evaluated.
Okay. So we have a motion on the table and we have a second. If you're in agreement with the motion, then we can vote. If we're not, then we'll, if it fails, then we'll entertain a new motion, or we can entertain an amendment to the motion.
So is there just one discussion, or do we have open for more discussion?
You can. We're discussing the motion right now if you have some further discussion.
I just, under discussion, would like to say that I think there's a lot of parties that aren't satisfied with what's gone on, and I think Tammy's suggestion that we table it until more satisfaction between the parties can be reached through discussions, through meeting and talking, I think would be more important than just passing it right now and just say the heck with everybody. I think we need to. My discussion now is that maybe we should not just pass it. We should send it, table it, and until more things can be worked out, because there is a lot of things that aren't a lot of people that aren't satisfied.
Okay.
Continued discussion on that is, there's been discussions for months and months and months. You know, what's going to change tomorrow?
Well, that's a good question. There's been discussion for months and months and months, but we've seen that there is a rift here. Things are not. They're not satisfied.
You're absolutely right. There's a rift. And like I said before, we're talking about less than 200 deer-sized animals that don't eat in the same place as cows. If we can't come together on that...
Well, we agree on that.
Oh, no, do we? Okay,
that's
now
fine,
so we agree on 200... No, just a second. We agree on less than 200 deer-sized animals that eat different food than cows.
Yeah.
If we can't, that's enough said right there. Then
okay.
So I think there's two sentiments here. I'm just talking. I'm not telling you how to vote. So we do have a motion and a second. I would suggest we vote now on the motion. If you're not in agreement with that, then you have the opportunity to vote no. And if that fails. If it passes, we move on to the next item. If that fails, then we'll have to entertain a new motion. So I would propose that we vote on the motion as presented. All those in favor?
Four.
You have four? Okay. All those opposed?
Five.
Okay, so the motion fails. We're ready to entertain a new motion.
Okay, I will go back to, I don't know if the word is table or whatever, but my recommendation or my motion is that in order for the support to be here from this board, there needs to be this multiple use working group and try to be respectful. Not all parties have ever been in the same room at the same time to try and work this out. There's not been the whole multiple use group together. And I know from several conversations, not only with SFW members, we're not happy that the sheep guys were meeting behind closed doors with the permittees and landowners. And I mean, I've been in the middle of several individual conversations with a lot of different people and trying to fill this out. I think there's it's a possibility, but I think everybody needs to come to the table and leave their attitudes and personalities and whatever else behind, because we've been doing that for a long time. And I know SFW and FNAZ and whoever else have been pushing this and looking forward to this for many, many years. It was a big surprise to the rest of us a year and a half ago. and that was my concern to begin with, because I can see the conflicts, and it might not be just the 200 head of sheep that's the conflict. The conflict comes from those people that are actively trying to get rid of the hunting or get rid of public grazing, whether it's sheep or livestock, whatever else. That's where the issues are. It's a political, social conflict.
Okay, I'm trying to get, okay, let me see if I can get to a motion.
Are you going to make a motion, or can I make a quick motion that I think might capture what you're talking about?
Let me make it.
Oh, it was like seven. Okay, that's fine.
Instead of let her make the motion. It's her motion.
Okay. So my motion is that if the Wildlife Board would agree to a multiple-use working group that is full-on management with DWR, those stakeholders would be representatives from the landowners, the permittees, livestock permittees, the organizations, not excluding the wool growers, cattlemen, Farm Bureau, SFW, FNAS, you know, whatever the sportsman groups are, and local government. I think that if that was in place before the Wildlife Board made their decision, we could work this out. That's my motion. I don't know how they do it. But.
So you're basically saying that you recommend that we not approve the proposal as presented until this working group that you described has more time to come together and see if they can come to a consensus.
Yes.
Or reasonable agreement.
Yes.
Are you okay with that?
Yes.
Do we have a second? Okay, any further discussion?
Can I get some clarification on more time?
Sure.
When's the Wildlife Board meeting? In June?
Five years, is that what I heard, 5 years? That's what I'm talking about. It's perfect.
It's the end of May?
Let's do 5 years.
Yeah.
I think we can form a group like the Friends of the Paunsagant or the Henry Mountain. I think we can come up with that group to help do this. I really think we can. I think we should, and I think it's important enough that we need to. I think that we need to have a couple of. I mean, if we're going to sit here and decide on who gets a seat, I think that could take us all night. But I agree with you. There needs to be a Mineral Mountains sheep group. I'm with that. I think everybody up here is with that. But I don't want to see the window and the door close. I think if you're open to an amendment of yours, I would propose that we move to pass this this as it was presented, with the caveat that we create a working group, so we don't close some windows and some doors.
Yeah, there's not enough teeth and boundaries and those kind of
things.
There's
no teeth and boundaries in the other way either.
Okay,
you've got a second and a motion, so let's vote. I'm good with that. I'm sorry, I hijacked it.
You can make an amendment, and if we get a second, we can vote on the amendment, or we'll proceed with the motion. Okay. All right. So we do have a motion and a second. Are we clear on the motion at the table?
Clear as mud.
Okay. All those in favor?
Seven.
All those opposed?
Two.
Motion carries. Okay. Let's move on. Good. That's been a long time coming. Okay. All right. We'll go to item number 10. Kenny Johnson is going to talk about the proposed rule amendments to conservation and sportsman permits.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it morning yet?
It's getting close.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and RAC members and members of the public. I'm Kenny Johnson, the admin services chief from Salt Lake, and I hit my mid-40s and had to break out the reader, so I'm going to be referring to my paper copies here as we go through the presentation. So first off, we are proposing changes to help streamline some of the internal processes and reporting of the conservation permit program. For those unfamiliar with the program, the Wildlife Board approves a small amount of permits, generally 5%, to be auctioned to generate revenue to fund wildlife conservation. The funding is divided between the organization offering the permit for sale and the division, with 30% of the proceeds going direct to the division, 10% of the proceeds to be utilized by the organization to cover admin expenses, and 60% retained by the organization to be spent on division-approved projects. As we've kind of seen with Justin and Gary and a few of the former presentations tonight already. So the Wildlife Board asked for ways for us to report the positive impacts of these dollars in a more straightforward manner, and I think the changes we're going to talk about tonight move us a step closer to accomplishing that goal. We're proposing to strike an old and vague section of rule that allowed groups to propose an alternate way to distribute conservation permits. Our intent is to clarify that they be distributed initially through auction to the high bidder. We also want to clarify that there can only be one statewide conservation permit per species. And third, if we have more than one rifle season for the same species, the conservation permit holder must select a single season. They wouldn't automatically get multiple any weapon or rifle seasons. Moving forward, I can remember which button. We propose that all interest earned on the 60% of the retained revenue be required for use on projects. That conservation funds committed to approved projects must be remitted to the division within 60 days of being invoiced instead of 90. And third, that retained revenue must be expended on approved projects were transferred to the division by September 1st, 2 years following collection. And that's an important distinction. We've been tracking it as committed and spent. This would change and allow us to track it as actual spent funds or transferred funds to the division. So all the projects would be approved up front with a signed cover sheet. We'll invoice for the total work to complete the project, collect the funds within the 60 days, and then the work will be scheduled and completed. So with this process change, the information would be placed in the division's database and allow us to show those funds fully expended each year. And the associated projects in our annual conservation report that we provide to the board and to the public. So this update to process would actually replace the need for groups to provide us a bunch of redundant information in an annual report. Moving on to some internal process updates with issuing and redeeming vouchers, we're developing some technology to help us better track and issue vouchers electronically. This will prevent paper vouchers from being misplaced, delayed, or needing to be reprinted. Groups must provide the name of the successful bidder, the winning bid amount, and the date of the event where the permit was auctioned within 10 days of the fundraising event. If the successful bidder elects not to use a permit opportunity, they can designate it to another person as long as the conservation group is notified, the winning bid amount hasn't decreased, and an affidavit is signed that they verify they're not profiting from the assignment. And if assigned to another person, the group has 10 days to submit a complete voucher receipt to the division with the updated information. Next, we propose to clarify our current practice that the division will not issue a conservation permit until the voucher information is received entirely, the recipient possesses a valid hunting or combination license, and that the permit fee is collected and someone from our front counter staff verifies that the hunter is legally eligible to possess the permit. The provisions outlined in this slide and the previous slides would also apply to the special conservation antelope island permits as well. And two final items on conservation permits. Regarding season dates, we want to specify in the definition section that a conservation permit for turkey is not valid during the three-day youth-only general season hunt unless the holder is actually a youth, qualifies as a youth. And then we're proposing changing the conservation bison permit season to run August 1st to January 31st, and that is just to be consistent with other once-in-a-lifetime bison opportunity. Next, we have our expo permit rule amendments. For those not familiar with the expo permit program, it's a contract awarded in five-year increments with a renewal option after 5 years. There are two primary purposes for this rule: to generate revenue to fund wildlife conservation in Utah, and to attract a regional or national wildlife expo to Utah. As part of the program, the Wildlife Board authorizes up to 200 permits a year that are allocated to hunters through a drawing held at the expo. An application handling fee of $5 per application is collected by the expo organizer. 30% of these funds are required to be spent on division-approved projects. The remaining 70% may be used for administrative costs to help with the expo. And the current expo organizer has committed the net proceeds to programs, projects, and personnel that support conservation initiatives in Utah. The majority of the rule amendments in R657-55 came about from the last time we awarded the contract. And as you'll see on the next couple of slides, some of the billing and expenditure concepts we just talked about for conservation will sound familiar here as we streamline and standardize the billing and reporting options here as well. So like all state agencies, when we contract with outside entities for services, we're required to follow state purchasing code. When the last contract was awarded, we worked to align state law with the timeline in our rule, and they didn't overlap perfectly, but we absolutely followed state procurement code. To remove any confusion, we're making it very clear that we follow the publicly noticed RFP process as outlined in the state purchasing code. These rule revisions will harmonize the expo contract application and renewal process to be consistent with the state procurement code. This will ensure that all interested qualified groups will know the process up front and are considered through a standard formal procurement process. Next, we'd like to clarify that the division has authority to terminate the contract in interest of wildlife conservation, management issues, or compliance with law. And the third bullet there, specify each year we get a handful of complaints that some lucky individuals drew more than one expo permit. And we listen to the public, and we just want to specify that moving forward, expo permit applicants be eligible to receive only one expo permit each year. So if multiple permits are drawn, they would need to select a favorite permit within a couple of days of being notified by the division. And then similar to our proposed process streamlining, as discussed previously, we're proposing to require accrued interest on the application handling fee revenue dedicated to projects to be used for projects. And then, again, similar application handling fee revenue committed to approved projects must be remitted to division within 60 days instead of 90 after being invoiced. And then one other minor change here. Application handling fee revenue for projects must be expended on or transferred to the division by August 1st. So we moved that deadline up a month to get that report earlier. So again, we won't track this as committed and spent, just actually spent or transferred to the division. And that will allow us to zero these funds out annually as well. And then invoicing for these approved projects up front, monitoring expenditures in our database, replaces the need for the Expo contractor to provide redundant Expo details to us. And the division will continue to report this detail in our annual audit that we present to the Wildlife Board and to the public. And then finally, a couple of proposed changes to the draw application procedures rule. These are fairly minor and will be really quick. We're proposing to copy the current rule, which outlines waiting periods in the Expo rule, R657-55, over to this draw application procedures rule. So this is the current practice already in place and spelled out in the Expo rule, and would just consolidate these permit types into this one rule location. All other waiting periods apply, and there are no other changes proposed there. And lastly, two minor changes to just for consistency across draws. We'd like to standardize the requirement for a hunter to possess a valid hunting or combination license in order to apply for sandhill crane, sharp-tailed grouse, greater sage grouse, and swan permits, and ensure group applications consisting of qualifying youth are considered for the increased percent of permits allocated to youth for turkey, sandhill crane, sharp-tailed grouse, and greater sage grouse. So essentially, if you apply as a group of qualifying youth, you get counted as youth and have a better chance to draw a permit. And that is all I have.
Okay. Is there any questions from the RAC? Craig?
I'm just curious. Thought it occurred to me as you was going through that. How do you determine who gets to have those permits to auction them off? I mean, I've been to sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, and they seem to get a handful of them for all their dinners throughout the state. But who makes that decision, and how do you get in line to get that? Because it obviously is a little bit of a moneymaker for you.
Yeah, absolutely. They have to be a 501c3 recognized organization through the federal tax code, and they have to have a wildlife conservation mission. And so that's the basic qualifications to get in.
Gene?
Man, we get these rules and amendments to rules presented to the RAC. We never get the doggone conservation permits presented to the RAC. I'm just wondering why.
You mean the totals and numbers and all of that?
Yeah, how many conservation permits to, from who to where, for how long, out of which units?
That's a fair question. Again, it's a Wildlife Board authority to distribute those and approve those. Not sure why we couldn't share that information with the RACs, though.
Well, if it's Wildlife Board authority to approve them, and the RACs are supposed to advise the Wildlife Board, it seems like they'd ought to come.
If I may, when the RACs and they hear the rules, and with the conservation permit rule, and in that rule it spells out how those permits are going to be allocated, and so we just follow that rule as they're taken to the board. And it's very clear there's a formula in the rule change. There's between 11 and 30 permits. There's one that's given, and we just simply follow that and take it to the board. That's why. But the RACs have input on what that criteria look like, and then we just follow it and take that to the board, if that helps.
Okay, any further questions?
So let me get this straight. John Smith draws an elk tag and a deer tag, and Billy Bob is upset with his 1 in 4,000 chance of drawing the same tag, so he calls up and bitches, and now John Smith can't have both tags. It's fantastic. Like, okay, I'm sorry, it's not fantastic. It's just, really, we're going to take... Let's not do this, guys. Let's let them. If they're lucky enough to hunt, if they're lucky enough to draw two permits, let them shoot them. Just gonna say that.
Okay, now you can't comment because your comments are done. Do we have any questions in the audience? We do have two comment cards. So we have Darren West, followed by Troy Justinson.
Ladies and gentlemen of the RAC, I am Darren West. I am the Utah Conservation Project Coordinator with the Mule Deer Foundation. I coordinate the projects across the state, and I would just like to say we are very happy to be able to use these conservation permits at our local banquets for auction as well as at the expo. We've been able to generate millions of dollars for conservation projects throughout the state. This money that is raised in Utah with those tags from Utah stays in Utah on the ground for these species. In southern Utah alone, in this region, annually over the last 3 years from those permit sales, we have put $320,000 back into habitat enhancement in this region. So, as a Mule Deer Foundation, we strongly recommend you approve the recommendations put forth by the division. Thank you.
Thank you.
Troy Justinson, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. Before I comment on this, I just wanted to thank the RAC for hearing the last issue. Obviously, it didn't go the way that I had hoped, but I respect the process, and the process played out, and so thank you for taking the time to hear that and to address it. Concerning the conservation permit rule and the expo rule, we support the division's recommendations. I think it's important that you understand as a RAC, you're not voting to, as far as you're continuing with these permits, you're actually just voting to accept the changes in it to add more clarity and to make sure there is no loopholes in that, and that we are transparent as possible. As Justin talked about earlier and showed in his presentation, this is a revenue stream unique to Utah. Not only Utah, but it's unique to the world. It has generated more money to put back on the ground to benefit wildlife and livestock than any other process that I am aware of. It's a huge boost to Utah and our wildlife and our livestock. We support these recommendations. We're grateful for the opportunity to be a part of it, and just appreciate your time tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. That's all the comment cards. Do we have any comments from the RAC, except for Brian? Gene?
We've got a problem with this pay-to-play system, and it's that it supposedly, as you have said, 5%. And I've seen it run up on some units where permits have been cut to where they're taking 16.5%. And if you'd throw in a couple of landowner permits, 20% of the tags are going pay to play. The expo tags remain the same, even though the unit gets cut by half. The hunters from the general public, their draw gets cut by half. All this stuff comes out of, according to what I've read, comes out of the draw. If there's five, if the draw is 45, and conservation permits are 5, then there's really only 40 tags left. If I got another 3 for the expo, and the percentages build up on the pay to play, and the rule that you can set these for 5 years while you're cutting the tags on a unit every year. It just amounts to the average hunter really getting shorted on this end while pay-to-play goes wild. I'm not against conservation tags per se, but it's just not right that there's this system that takes so many out of the draw for the common hunter.
Gene, I agree that it's kind of a pay to play state sometimes if you want extra opportunity, but the facts are that money that they draw subsidizes our tags in a way that the division doesn't need to pay for. That they get money from somewhere else than just tag sales to keep the tag sales down. So I mean, yeah, there's a pay to play factor, but I think it's overall it's for the greater good. I think it's a great program.
It's not a great program when it's 20%.
For the millions of dollars, I think that if it's not 20%, but that's fine. Let's just vote on it.
The hunters I represent don't give a damn.
They would if they paid for it, but let's just vote. It's 11:30. It's 11:36.
Okay.
Yeah, I've had my say.
And I'm good.
But
it's not 20%.
I'm standing up to you that
it's not
the 20%. Hunters that I represent don't give a damn.
It's not 20%.
Okay.
Let's just play fake numbers.
You guys can have this conversation a little later, but let's move on. Do we have any other comments on this item?
Well, my comment is I agree with Gene. I've always had heartburn over this conservation permits, taking it from the general public and letting somebody with lots of money buy it. I agree with Gene here.
Okay. We're ready to entertain a motion, I think.
Having had my say, I'll make a motion that we accept it as presented.
Okay. And
I second that, please.
We have a close second.
How in the world do you have that comment and then accept
from
it as
Brian
presented?
Tammy. Okay. All those in favor. Any opposed? Okay, let's go again. All those in favor? Unanimous. Okay. Item number 11. Marty Bushman, you're up.
It is late. We're all tired. And what I'm going to address is not all that interesting, so I am trying to move through it quickly. Just some handful of rule changes that we're proposing here to deal with some committees that have been created in rule. And we about. Anyway, I'll get started on this. This past year, we had a newspaper that kind of took interest in the Department of Natural Resources and the different types of committees and boards that they use and whether they were complying with the Open and Public Meeting Act. The good news is Wildlife Resources came through it just fine. Some of our sister agencies, not so well. But it caused us to take a closer look at the various types of committees and working groups and other gatherings that the Division of Wildlife Resources sets up as it's managing wildlife to make a determination whether they might be potentially subject to the Open and Public Meeting Act. And so in that process, we identified four different committees and five different rules that are created by rule and by that fact alone arguably are subject to the Open and Public Meeting Act. And these were all groups that was never intended to create that type of burden on them. They're largely smaller groups that are working on individual issues, not policy. And so what we're proposing here is in R657, the collection, importation, transportation, and possession of animals rule, that the certification review committee be eliminated from the rule. The air remedy rule, it's called the air committee, same thing. The amphibian reptile collection, importation, transportation, and possession rule, certification review committee, that it be eliminated. The recreational lease of private lands for free public walking access, there's a committee there. And the division variance rule. So just to break those down, the certification review committee operates under two different rules, the reptile rule on possession, the other dealing with all other animals. It's staffed by representatives of DWR, Department of Agriculture, and Department of Health. And the committee makes recommendations to the Wildlife Board on petitions to reclassify certain species, variance requests for prohibited species, and appeals to COR denials. So what we're proposing is that this committee be eliminated, the responsibilities would be assumed by the division and exercised in consultation with the Department of Agriculture and Food and Department of Health. It would still have all the same groups, just the committee wouldn't be formally recognized in rule. The Air Committee operates under Chapter 50 of the Wildlife Rules. It's staffed solely by DWR representatives. The committee makes recommendations to the division director on complaints seeking relief from divisionaires in the processing and handling or issuing of wildlife documents. Again, this is a group that deals solely with just individuals that have concerns about the way their applications or their license documents were handled. Here, the responsibilities would be assumed by the division. Walking Access Committee operates under Chapter 56. It's staffed by DWR, representative, or sportsman interest, agricultural interests, and elected officials. Committee makes recommendations to the division director on complaints concerning the fair and equitable treatment of people participating in the walk-in access program. Of note, the committee in several years has never organized or met, so it's a bit superfluous at this point. But we are also proposing that its responsibilities assumed by the division. Variance Committee, Chapter 57, staffed only by DWR. And the committee makes recommendations to the division director on remedial relief sought by people who are substantially precluded from participating or in a hunting activity or obtaining a wildlife document because of some event or condition that's beyond their control. Like the others, the division would assume these responsibilities. And that is the five rule amendments that are being proposed.
Thank you. Any questions? We don't have any comment cards. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept as presented.
Do we have a second? All those in favor?
Unanimous.
Unanimous.
Thank you.
I have two quick items of other business. First, a couple weeks ago, a group in St. George had a very successful event with special needs kids. We had over 400 special needs kids come out to a fishing event. The schools brought them in buses. And the local fishing group couldn't do this without the support of won the Dedicated Hunter Program. We look at this program in a different way than other people. It's essential for us to do the things that we want to do by having those volunteers. We couldn't do it without the support of the DWR, and we couldn't do it without the support of some of the other sportsmen's group, especially SFW. They were a major contributor this year, and we appreciate all those that came and helped, and we look forward to helping this event grow in the future. So thank you very much for those that helped. If anybody's interested, I have a bunch of photos up here. And then if you look at the back sheet of your agenda, we have proposed meeting locations, and it's a little bit different than what we've done in the past. We decided we didn't want to go to Hurricane in July, and so they put that in Richfield with the Hurricane meeting in September. Is this something we need to vote on, or we just discuss it and see if is everybody okay with this? Is anybody seeing concerns or problems? Okay, I think we're good. With that being said, we call this meeting adjourned before midnight.
Sir.